Today is Friday, August the 20th, 2021, and the time is 8:30 a.m. I now call the meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. I'd like to announce that Debbie Scanlon has been appointed to serve as the Chair of the Audit Committee and will be presiding over the meeting today. And we certainly want to welcome Debbie to this position, and we certainly appreciate her accepting the role as Chairman of the Audit Committee. Ms. Scanlon, I'll turn the meeting over to you at this time.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Holt. At this time, I will conduct a roll call, a roll check. Hector Cerna, are you present? He was.
He was
present. He was present.
Hector, are you on mute? Hold on one more time, please.
Hector Cerna, are you present?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. Larry Long, are you present?
Present.
We have a quorum of the Audit Committee with three members present. If there is anyone wishing to address the Commission, you will need to use the webinar platform in order to be recognized. You must use the raise your hand feature on your screen and submit the agenda item you wish to comment on using the question feature. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes, and agenda items, 10 minutes. For the first order of business is the approval of the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on June 18, 2021. These minutes were circulated to the members in the agenda packet. Are there any corrections to the minutes?
I have no corrections to
this. I have none.
Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of the Finance Commission Audit Committee meeting held on June 18th, 2021?
Chairman Scanlon, I'll make a motion.
Larry Long makes the motion.
Yeah, this is Hector Cerna, second.
Hector Cerna, second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
The ayes have it, and the motion passes. We will now move on to item B. Commissioner Pettijohn, would you please give us your report?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 5 is the audit activities report for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, and there's three items listed here. Two of these are new items from the annual internal audit report, which is presented later in your packet, so you'll hear the report on those. Those are ongoing as we work to implement those from that new audit. And then the third item is a pending audit from the Department of Public Safety. Field work was conducted some time ago, and we are still awaiting a report on that item. And that's all. Well, and then if you turn the page, there is a report from the State Office of Risk Management where they reviewed our continuity of operations plan, which is required to be filed with them biannually. We filed that COOP plan. They review that plan. And there are three recommendations that they provided at the bottom of page 7. The first one relates to memorandums of understanding with outside agencies for particular IT and facility needs. We are currently still under consideration on that particular item of how we're going to respond related to that. We've got some projects in place that would affect that, so we're kind of working through that issue. And then the other issue on the alternate facilities, they already modified that actually in the report here. And then the item on testing, training, and exercise has already been implemented. So that's that concludes our report of audit activities.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Jones?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. SML's audit activity report is on page 9. There's one, the internal audit by Garza Gonzalez on procurement and contract management. There were no findings, and there will be more detail given by the auditor later in the agenda.
Okay, thank you. And Commissioner Cooper?
I'd like to ask Wendy Rodriguez to present the Texas Department of Banking's upcoming activity, please.
Good morning, members. Wendy Rodriguez for the Texas Department of Banking. On page 10, you will find the department's outstanding audit activities report. There are 5 items listed, 4 of which are in process or in the midst of being remediated. However, the first audit listed as completed is the SecureSite confirmation background check audit that was performed by the Texas Department of Public Safety. This area is audited approximately every 3 years. There were 3 findings in this instance. which were all related to procedural items. In two instances, the corporate division updated or modified the procedures to document the processes. The last finding required a separation of background check information from files, of which has been completed and the information is now stored separately. Of a special note is the post-payment audit, which is at the bottom of the tickler, being conducted by the Texas Comptroller of Public Accounts. It began in January and is still in process, and we anticipate a preliminary draft sometime in the fall. That's the end of my report.
Thank you. We will now move on to item C. Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you. Item C is the investment officer report. I'd like to ask Brian Diamond to provide the report for the OCCC.
Good morning, Audit Committee members. Maria Diamond, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. The investment officer report is on page 11 and 12 of your packet. Pretty much normal activity to report. We did execute a cash transfer of about $65,000 to the investment, with an overall increase in the investment of about $446,000, with the total endowment fund of $9.5 million at the end of Q3. That's the end of that. That's the conclusion of that report.
Yeah, that's a pretty standard activity for this quarter.
Chairman, this is Larry Long. I've got a question, if I could address Ms. Diamond. First of all, y'all do a great job of showing all the numbers here and everything. And as I was reading these three reports, I personally just kind of zeroed in on the invested portfolio portion of the report there. What I want to understand, when I look at the number, you know, the beginning balance on 3/1 and the ending balance on 5/31, there's some big changes there, and I'm sure it's me that I'm just missing something, but there's not many additions or transfers in and out, but there's big changes of value, and I just wanted to understand just a little bit more clarity on, you know, how those values are changing so much in that period without transfers in and out.
Yes, sir. Commissioner Pettijohn may want to address that.
Certainly. So there's a fairly large transfer you see right there, a reduction in the investments in the short-term investments, and a negative change there, and then a positive change into the alternate investments. So those are changes that are made by the fund manager. This fund is invested. We are a tiny sliver of a giant portfolio of endowment funds. And so our interest in that fund, we don't have, you know, we're not going out and making these trades. The Texas Safekeeping Trust does this, and they invest in particular, you know, at times and when they see appropriate. One of the things that may really help, I know it's a ways till February, but, and I was going to mention this in our investment policies, is we invite them to come provide a presentation to the commission biannually about the fund itself, and that might be super helpful, and I might be able to give you some more background on from the prior presentation that they presented. Some of that information might be helpful, but again, this is probably we did make an investment in cash some previously. I don't remember exactly when that was, but
second quarter, maybe.
And so there was some cash that went from the cash account into the invested portfolio, and so they had some of that sitting there they needed to invest, and then they may have traded out of something. And so some of those are, you know, the growth and the value as well as the distribution. But because it's a piece of a much larger fund, we don't have that individual detail about, you know, exactly the trades that have happened.
I hear what you're saying.
This is Hector Sedlak. Could you remind us what percentage of the fund we have? I know it's very small, but remind us.
I don't remember the exact percentage, but it's probably it's super, super, super small. It's less than one. It's like one. I'll get the number for you. It's very small. I would say under 5%, but I'll get you that number.
And Commissioner, I do understand everything you're saying, and that we're part of a larger fund. That what what I'm looking, but that is our portion. The 3.6 million starting is our portion in that fund, correct?
The short-term investments. Those are your short-term investments.
And so I don't see whether it's part of a big fund. I'm just not seeing any transfers in and out and a huge valuation change or a huge end of balance change. Put it that way. And maybe this is something for offline, but I would like to understand this reporting better.
Okay. Yeah, we're happy to spend some more time on that with you.
Okay.
Certainly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Commissioner Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. SML's investment officer report is on page 13. It reflects the activity for third quarter, and we would be glad to answer any questions. And if there are no questions, Madam Chairman, that concludes our report.
Okay, thank you. And Commissioner Cooper.
Get on page 14, we have the report of the seized prepaid funeral funds. And at this point in time, we have no seized funds, so obviously zero. Then beginning on page 15, we have the trust-funded prepaid funeral guarantee fund report. A book value of starting with $1,375,000 and ending with $1,409,000. It shows the activity. The deductions of $10,000 are generally speaking primarily the what we have to escheat to the comptroller's office. Item two at the top of 42,000 with the note down at the bottom gives you the additions of the fund, and they're primarily restitutions that are coming in from people that we've made agreements with. And then the fund, the balance is down below. After the last meeting, we decided that we can put more money, take more money out of the safekeeping and put it into more of a term investment where we can get a little bit higher rate of return. So the American Bank of Commerce CD that you see down at the bottom, $245,000 is a new investment. And hopefully that follows the directions of the audit committee from last time. And then beginning on page 16, we have the insurance-funded prepaid funeral fund. It's $745,000 ending in $791,000. Just FYI, every contract, they have to put in a dollar until the fund reaches $1 million. So we have just a little bit of activity. The additions includes assessments collected from the permit holders, as I just mentioned. And we end up with, down below, you have the activity. We have $300,000 in the more liquid amount of money. And then we have two CDs. And that concludes my report. Be happy to answer any questions.
Then do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2021 third quarter investment officer reports?
This is Hector Sabo, so moved.
Is there a second?
Larry Long, I'll second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. We will now move on to item D, starting with Commissioner Pettiton.
Thank you. Item D includes the readoption of the investment policies for the agencies, and the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner policy begins on page 17 is the red line version, and then page 25 is a clean version with the changes included. And I basically characterize the changes like five different types of changes, and so let me run through what those five changes are. First, you can see there's a statement of the readoption reflecting the current date. Next, we've updated the reference to the investment policy for endowment funds that is maintained by the Texas Treasury Safekeeping Trust Company, who are our fund managers for the Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund. And as I mentioned earlier, we invite those fund managers to a presentation. Well, that'll be scheduled for the February 2022 Audit Committee meeting, and they'll discuss the fund's performance, the diversity, the allocation strategies associated with the fund. So we'll anticipate that. But their investment policy really guides the endowment, and we adopt that as part of this policy, and so we've updated the reference to that. There are some formatting changes. The third change, there's formatting changes in here just for referencing and readability. next, we've eliminated and added some language for consistency with the other two agencies, particularly in sections 3, 7, 11, and 12. And then lastly, we added some new language on periodically reviewing rating changes on investments, as well as restating the prudent investor standard. It's printed earlier, but we've restated it. Again, that's consistent with the other two policies. We try to be consistent where we can. And so those are the primary types of changes or those are the changes that are included in this particular draft. I would like to request permission to make two additional small corrections for typographical errors. One's on page 22, section 8. The first sentence, somehow the P was getting dropped out of deposits, and we'd like to keep the P in deposits from being struck. And then the next one is on page 23. There's some new language, and the word B somehow lost its first character, B, and there's a floaty E out there. So we'd like to make those two small changes, and otherwise we would recommend. Oh, one more thing. On page 33, if you follow along, there's a report of the training that has been, the staff that are, according to section 11 of the policy, it requires the investment officer and any other employees active in the investment function to attend training not less than once each biennium. So every year when we readopt these policies, we bring to you the status of the investment training that for the staff that are involved with the investment officer, Moran Diamond, and then any other staff involved in the investments. And so at the appropriate time after the other agencies have presented, we would respectfully request that the audit committee adopt the, or recommend the adoption of the investment policies as amended for the OCCC.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Jones?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. SML's investment policy is updated, begins on page 35, and I'll call on Antonia Antoff to present the changes.
Good morning. Antonia Antoff for Texas for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Our red line investment policy begins on page 35. Our policy this time has multiple changes, and they all stem, they can be grouped into big groups based on legislation that was passed this session. We have a new fund added, Mortgage Grant Fund. This fund has been added to the investment policy. We considered creating a different investment policy for that fund, but we realized that everything is the same. The investment standard, how the funds can be invested, it's the same for the Mortgage Grant Fund as it is for the recovery fund, so we just decided to add it into the existing investment policy. The other change that is happening is that our statute was changed that the amounts in the recovery fund can be invested and reinvested from the statute was changed to instead of to be the standard to be by ERS investment standards, which is the employee retirement system. They invest significant amounts of funds. So for us to follow their investment standards was difficult and unnecessary. So this was changed to just say that our amounts will be invested and reinvested based on, in according to the Public Funds Investment Act. Now our funds are not considered public funds in general. By definition, SDSI agencies' funds are not public. They are the agencies' So we are not subject to the Public Funds Investment Act in general, but we try to follow everything that it says as best practices. But now the statute says that we can invest and reinvest in accordance with the Public Funds Investment Act. So we have made changes in the list of acceptable investment, authorized investments, and multiple other changes to stick closer to the Public Funds Investment Act. The other changes, the investment standard, we're changing to the investment standard that's described in the Constitution, or which is the prudent investor standard, and we have included that in the policy. This is in general. Let me mention a couple of more things. We have changed, as I said, the list of authorized investments to match closely the Public Funds Investment Act list. But in reality, are the investments that our policy allows. There's only one change. We're adding investment pools to the authorized investments because we're in conversations with Texas Safekeeping Trust to discuss what could possibly be investing better than just repurchase agreements. And so since they manage a couple of pools, we just added that. We don't know that we're going to use it, but we have added that just in case we are able to join some of their investment pools. We have added a strategy for the mortgage grant fund. According to the Public Funds Investment Act, each fund needs to have its own strategy. So we have added a strategy for the investing of the funds of the mortgage grant fund. And there's, of course, some punctuation and small changes. My title has been updated from Director of Administration and Finance to Director of Operations, and a couple of other changes of language that Commissioner Pettijohn described. They're the same, updating the language to rating changes. This is in general the two groups of changes that we're making throughout the policy. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to address. Any questions? And then our clean policy starts on page 42. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. And Commissioner Cooper?
Yeah, our policy starts, so the red line starts on page 49, and the finalized draft is on 59. We have some minor changes, and some of its best practices. And so you can obviously look at those changes on the red line version. I will point out that we do put the format maybe a little bit different because we put this as a part of our policy. And so this will end up being in our policy manual so we can have everything kind of in one place. Be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions?
No questions.
Thank you. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the readoption of the investment policies for the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, and the Texas Department of Banking?
Ms. Larry Long, I'll make a motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
This is Hector Shelby, I second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you. We will now move on to item C, starting with Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you. The next item is the third quarter financial statement. And I'd like to call upon Moran Diamond to provide that report.
Thank you, Commissioner. Moran Diamond, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. The third quarter financial statement is on page 71 of your packet. I just wanted to highlight a few items from the variance analysis on the following page. Overall, revenues are 3% over budget. And then moving to expenditures, with regard to personnel, these expenditures are 11% under budget, primarily due to a planned delay in filling vacant positions. Travel, as you might anticipate, due to travel restrictions in response to COVID-19, these expenditures are significantly under budget. Moving to professional fees and services, this category is about 63% under budget because costs have not yet been incurred for computer programming services for ALEKS upgrades and enhancements, which is our online licensing and examination and complaint portal, as well as legal services or financial accounting services. Those have not yet been incurred either. And lastly, with regard to information technology, this category is approximately 39% under budget due to timing of projects and expenses.
Any questions? Great, thank you. Commissioner Jones?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. SML's financials begin on page 75, and I'll call on Antonia Antoff to present them.
So our financials start actually on page 74. These are third quarter financials. I have outlined on page 75 is the budget variance analysis, and I have outlined the differences. I just want to address a couple of items. Our revenues overall are at 3.6% over budget. However, I just want to remind the members that we ended up last quarter reducing fees, licensing fees, in order to deal with the excess applications that we have in licensing and also with thrift assessments. We have big variance in personnel costs due to vacancies. Filling vacancies during COVID has proven a very slow process and a difficult process. Travel has not been incurred. The breakdown was not included of the travel, but all of our $182 of incurred travel was all in-state non-employee travel. We have a couple of information technology projects that are going on that we use the excess funds that we had to work on a couple of projects. One is a cybersecurity-related project, and one is related to transitioning our network to the data center of the Department of Information Resources. And both of these projects are expected to conclude at the end of this month, so we will see increased information technology costs in the fourth quarter as well. Overall, our expenditures are about 15% on the budget. Our liquidity report is on page 76. We're currently 8.6 months down from 10.8 months last quarter, mainly due to the reduction of those waiving of the assessments and reduction of fees. We do expect that in the end of the fourth quarter we will be just under 6 months. Hopefully. And that concludes my report. I'll be happy to address if you have any questions.
Madam Chairman, I just have a quick question. This is Larry Long. And pardon me in advance if y'all have already addressed this, but the increase in licensing fee, is that in the middle of COVID? What's the explanation?
Yes. The mortgage industry has grown tremendously during COVID over the last year. And the thrift industry has grown as well. So you'll see at various points during the report I will be saying This shows examples of how the mortgage industry has grown.
Okay,
so we have had a lot more licensee applications during the interestingly enough.
Very strange that it should be.
It's a tremendous growth increase from over the last 12 to 18 months.
And I guess that's a good thing. So
it is a good thing.
Yeah.
As long as they're compliant and our exam ratings show that they are primarily. So. it is a good thing for Texas and people wanting to take out a mortgage.
That's great. Thank you, Commissioner.
Certainly.
Thank you. And Commissioner Cooper?
Department of Banking starts on page 77. I'd like to ask Sammy Chadley to come forward to give our report.
Good morning, Sammy Chadley, Texas Department of Banking. On page 77 is our operating statement for the quarter ending May 31st, 2021. Our revenues, our actual revenues are at 96.8% of our budget revenues, and our expenditures are at 85.6% actual versus budget. I will go over the detail as to why that is the case on page 78, which is our explanation of variances for this quarter. First, under non-depository supervision, there's a variance, and that is related to assessment reductions to the higher collection of penalties that were anticipated. And then on the penalties, we collected penalties primarily from unlicensed money services businesses. That was not budgeted. Actually, there was a minimal amount budgeted, but those came in higher. On the expenditure side, the main reasons are first, employee compensation benefits. We have 23 vacancies as of the third quarter. 10 of them were administrative and 13 were financial examiner series. Second, our travel, in-state and out-of-state travel, obviously due to the pandemic, we had minimal travel. And lastly, in the professional services, we have a positive variance there for three reasons. The first one, we had unexpended funds for a Sunset Advisory Commission compliance review that did not occur. We had lower expenditures than budgeted for building-related outside counsel fees, administrative law judge fees, and Office of Attorney General fees. And finally, an information technology contractor that was not hired as quickly as anticipated. Are there any questions so far? Okay. On page 79 is our liquidity report, and I'll just point to one item. Our unreserved cash for the period ending May 31st is at 4.24%, which is, I'm sorry, 4.24 months, which is between two to 6 month liquidity policy guidelines. Any questions?
Thank you. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2021 third quarter financial statement? Financial statements.
Secretary Sedgwick, so moved.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Larry Long, second.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it and the motion passes. Thank you. We will now move on to item F, beginning with Commissioner Pettijohn, please.
Thank you. The proposed budget is item F, and so for fiscal year 2022, our proposed budgets are presented on page 81 and 82. Same information, just a little bit different display of information. The Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner is respectfully presenting its proposed budget request of $8,351,044 for fiscal year 22. This budget request is for 80 full-time equivalent employees, which is a decrease of 2 employees from FY 21. The budget reflects a decrease in revenue of 9.2% because of enhanced discounts planned for FY 22. Expenditures in the proposed budget are decreasing by 5.6% from budgeted expenditures in FY 21. COVID-19 impacted our financial position throughout FY 21, primarily because we had expectations of returning to a more regular routine work and field examinations, which of course did not end up happening as we expected. Consequently, the OCCC has some fairly significant hangover effects from COVID in FY21 that we're having to deal with in FY22. FY22 will be in many ways for us a year of rebuilding, and we hope. The dynamic nature of the current situation is making it especially challenging to make these projections. However, we still feel like our key budget drivers are the changes in the industry markets, our staffing stability and retention, our examination travel requirements, and our information technology and cybersecurity needs. Our process was very collaborative, led by Director of Licensing and Finance, Moran Diamond, who you're going to hear from in a moment with a little more detail. We had full participation of all our departments who submitted their request and worked through performance metrics to correspond to budget levels. As a self-directed, semi-independent agency, it is imperative that we're transparent and accountable for our budget process. Our staff works very hard to be good stewards of these funds that we receive and efficiently and prudently use them to provide the necessary level of regulatory oversight. We're looking for that just right amount, not too much, not too little, but just right. As part of our transparent and accountable process, we request feedback, as you know, from our stakeholders on our proposed budget. We received 5 letters in support of the budget from the Texas Consumer Finance Association, the Texas Consumer Credit Coalition, the Texas Independent Automobile Dealers Association, the Texas Property Tax Lien Holders Association, and the Texas the Consumer Service Alliance of Texas, which is one that came in just recently. We can pass out copies of those. Let's go ahead and distribute those. That one came in late. I think we distributed the rest of them electronically, but this one we have a paper handout for you if you'd like to see it. We can always follow it up electronically. Just a couple of comments on changes in the industry market. Although our 2021 budget projected drop-off in some industry groups due to COVID and economic factors, there did not end up being a decrease in licensing and registration total numbers in the last year that we thought were going to happen. So for 22, we project a stable volume of most of our licensee bases and fairly consistent patterns of license renewal. During FY21, we experienced turnover of various positions, not unlike all the other agencies and other employers. We found it was difficult to bring on employees during the height of the pandemic, and so we left many positions unfilled. We are now in the phase to replace those positions, replace those staff members, but we realize we need to proceed at a measured pace. And so it's probably going to take us well into FY22, so this budget anticipates stage hiring. And frankly, it may take us into 23. I anticipate we'll be building up into 23 to build back our bench strength. We've also done some restructuring to gain some efficiencies, and so as I mentioned earlier, this will reduce by 2 FTEs, but also stage those positions. So it may be a temporary decline that's going to pop back up in a future year. At this point, I'll let Moran take over and talk about a little more of the details.
Thank you, Commissioner Moran Diamond, Director of Licensing and Finance. I'll start with staffing, go into that a little bit more. The proposed budget for FY22 includes a decrease of 8% in employee compensation, as some positions have been restructured to gain efficiencies, and the agency works to adjust optimum levels of staffing to meet regulatory business needs. The staffing budget does include progression of examiners on the career ladder, as well as competitive salary actions, promotions, and raises. Next, on other personnel costs, this category has an increase of 70%, primarily due to a reorganization of categories for Uniform Finance Commission financial statement presentation, but also includes a projection of potential lump sum payments due to employees departing from the agency. Next, with regard to information technology, the proposed budget includes a 31% increase from fiscal year 21, as IT services have been shifted from professional fees to information technology for, again, consistent financial statement presentation. IT services is increasing about $240,000, which is primarily due to 3 large IT projects. Further key items in the expenditure budget include travel expenditures, which we project a 9% increase as the agency plans to resume normal examination travel on September 1st. Of the examinations conducted in fiscal year 21, most were limited to the metropolitan areas due to travel restrictions. The risk assessment methodology for examinations has identified a priority for many examinations across the state outside those metro areas due to the factors related to the increasing time between examinations. Thus, travel expenses will need to increase in fiscal year 22 to address this examination priority. modeling on the proposed budget supports a performance target of 3,000 compliance examinations, which is up about 20% from fiscal year 21. With regard to professional fees, this includes a decrease of 78%, again, mostly due to a shift of IT services from professional fees to information technology. On miscellaneous operating expenses, this includes a decrease of 15%, mostly due to deferred maintenance decreases of about $10,000 and a decrease in projections for temporary staffing services of $32,000. Now, I wanted to talk about the fund balance. Similar to fiscal year 21, the budget proposes a deficit of revenues over expenditures with an intentional effect of funding some of the budget from the agency's reserves. The agency anticipates about 7 months of liquidity for operating expenses at the end of fiscal year 21. Unfortunately, it was very difficult to project our fiscal year 21 with great accuracy during the pandemic, as the commissioners mentioned. This amount of liquidity is higher than anticipated because of the inability to replace staff during the pandemic. While we are sensitive to the need to manage the fund balance, we are also concerned about the effects of spikes in assessments in future years and hope to smooth the swings in fund balance and assessments. In fiscal year 22, we project that the ending fund balance will also be about 7 months of liquidity, but that amount will fall below 6 months in fiscal year 23. We will explore opportunities to enhance the discounts as conditions warrant and evaluate those opportunities for deeper discounts at the appropriate time, which would then decrease the fund balance. Lastly, effects on the industries. In developing and proposing this budget, we have considered each industry's fair share of fees and have correlated discounts with that analysis. The agency has seen high rates of retention in almost all industry groups, and again, we'll look to enhance discounts in those areas when viable and appropriate. The agency is mindful not to have sharp swings in discounts in order to allow industry groups to plan for renewal costs. The proposed budget does anticipate deeper discounts than fiscal year 21 from the maximum assessment rates for motor vehicle sales finance licenses, pawn shop licenses, and regulated lender licenses. For example, in fiscal year 21, motor vehicle sales finance licensees received a discount of about 20% per license. We do anticipate that in FY 22, that discount will be upwards of 30%. Similarly, regulated lenders received a 35% discount in fiscal year 21, and in fiscal year 22, we anticipate a 40% discount. That concludes my explanation and remarks, and I will turn it back to Commissioner Pettigone.
Thank you, Moran. That concludes our presentation. Again, we're very grateful for the support that we've received on this budget. We're happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chairman, I have, maybe amounts to a comment and maybe a question, but first of all, thank you for a great, that's a really good report. I had about four questions written down here, and I think everyone got answered. Let me just say as a broad statement, it sounds like the industry's healthy and in good shape. The numbers aren't going down. The reason for the decrease in revenue is a reduce in fees and chopping away at the reserve that you have.
That's completely fair. That's our intent, and you know we intended to chip away at the reserve in 21, but because we thought some more people were going to leave the industry that didn't, and because we didn't spend as much, we didn't end up having that effect in 21. But that's what we're trying to do in 22,
yeah.
Or at least hold it even, even if it, you know, our intent with the budget is to chop away at it.
That's a very good explanation. I appreciate that. Thank you. I'll yield it back.
Thank you.
All right. No other questions. Thank you, Mayor. All right, Commissioner Jones, please.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. SML's budget, begins on page 83. Antonia Antock will present the proposed budget. However, I'd like to make a few comments before to give you some information about how we approach this budget and some of the fundamental bases upon which we built it. First of all, we are always recognize that we need to be good stewards of our financial resources. We recognize that being SDSI is a privilege, and that as a self-leveling, self-funding agency, each division, the mortgage division and the thrift division, must support its own cost of regulation, and that does remain true under this proposed budget. Both of these industries, mortgage and thrift, have grown tremendously over the last year. We propose a budget that gives us, the agency, the opportunity to add staff as we need to, and as we've analyzed that we may need to, and also helps us to be able to continue to always be improving our customer service. The budget also provides for an increase in IT expenditures for SML to continue to keep up with the needs in that very important and ever-changing space. And these analyses have determined what levels of assessments and fees we will need in order to be equitable to each industry and, as I said, to have each of them be fully self-supporting. Those are the general objectives that we use when we approach drafting the budget, and this proposed budget meets those objectives. And in the materials are letters of support from the Independent Bankers Association of Texas and Texas Bankers Association. Subsequently, we have received letters of support from Texas Mortgage Bankers Association and the Association of Texas Mortgage Professionals. We have provided those to the committee members this morning. And I do want to thank all of them for their continued support and comments and input into how we run the agency. I also want to acknowledge the work that goes into preparing this budget. We recognize the enormous responsibility we have to be good and prudent stewards of our finances, and we work together as a team to prepare the budget. Antonia Antoff coordinates the team approach, and when I say team, it is the directors who each analyze their needs for the coming year and their revenue stream as they think that it will be. They reach out to their staff members as needed. And then Antonia spends many hours working with them on the pieces to make sure that the whole works together. She and I have a series of meetings in which we also look at the various pieces and see where we end up at the end of the budget process. So I thank everybody at SML for their hard work on this proposed budget, and I'll let Antonia at this time go through some specifics.
Thank you, Commissioner. Our budget development process, according to our policy, resulted in a proposed budget which takes into account the agency's vision, mission, short and long-term goals, includes budget decisions targeting specific results and outcomes, provides incentives to employees, and promotes wellness and development, and includes input from the entire management team and other staff as needed. The proposed budget for fiscal year 22 provides for 7.2% increase in revenues and 3.7% increase of expenditures compared to the budget approved for fiscal year 2021. The proposed staff count for fiscal year 22 is 73 more than the approved for the previous year. Moving on to the revenues, the budgeted amount for licensing revenues is 10.7% higher than the prior budget due to a significant increase in our individual residential mortgage loan originator licensing activity. We have seen consistent increase in license and registration applications from approximately 550 per month during fiscal year 19 to 900 a month in fiscal year 20 to over 1,500 a month in fiscal year 21. On March 1, 2021, in order to address the excess funds the department generated as a result of this high volume of license activity, the fee for a new mortgage loan originator license was reduced from $140 to $25. The reduction assisted us to remain compliant with the self-leveling, self-funding statutory requirements and the requirements of the Finance Commission's liquidity policy. In fiscal year 22, in order to charge fair and equitable level of fees and to provide the benefit of excess revenues to the renewing licensees, we are proposing an increase to the individual new RMLO license fees from $25 to $50 and reducing the renewal license fees from $50 to $40. The other types of license and registration fees remain unchanged. The proposed changes will, in effect, refund some of the generated excess to the industry and assist the department in collecting only the amount of mortgage revenue sufficient to cover the total cost of industry's regulation. For tweaked revenues, we're budgeting to collect 5.5% more than budgeted in prior year as a result of growth in the industry. In fiscal year 22, we have budgeted to collect just under $4 million in assessments based on the lower of risk-weighted or total assets and assessed at 60% of our approved maximum rates. The assessments will be collected throughout the year in four equal installments. The collected thrift revenues will be sufficient to cover the total cost of this industry's regulation. As every year for fiscal year 22, we have budgeted $0 for penalties, so that no part of our operating budget hinges on amount of assessed and collected penalties. For miscellaneous revenues, the biggest portion of this category is depositor interest we receive from safekeeping trust, where all of our funds are held and typically invested overnight in repurchase agreements. During fiscal year 21, the interest rates have been very low. As a result, we have budgeted for a significant decrease in the amounts of depositor interest we expect to receive in fiscal year 22. Moving on to expenditures, our personnel costs category represents almost 90% of our total expenditure budget, and it's 2.9% higher than the budget approved for fiscal year 21. The increase is due primarily to adding net of three new positions to the department. We are adding funding for seven new positions and reducing the positions for the thrift division with four. The newly added positions are as follows: two license and permit specialists, one mortgage examiner, one administrative assistant in investigations, one thrift attorney, one system support specialist, and one purchaser. The reduction of positions in the thrift examination section comes as a result of reevaluating the staffing needs of our large financial institution program and only applies to vacant positions. The budget provides for merit increases, promotions, and equity adjustments for multiple employees in an effort to reward good performance, remain competitive with the state and federal counterparts, and encourage staff retention. The stability of our staff benefits the industry in both retained knowledge of departmental statutes, rules, and procedures, and also specific regulated entities and their management. We're budgeting for a decrease of 8.9% for travel expenditures than prior year's budget. Based on our estimates, when in-state travel resumes, it will not be at the pre-COVID levels. We have also reduced our estimates for out-of-state travel because we're making the assumption that some of the events our staff attends out-of-state, like conferences and seminars, will continue to be held virtually, as in fiscal year 21. The amount budgeted for professional fees and services is 20% lower than prior year's budget. In fiscal year 21, we had budgeted for consulting fees related to CAPS implementation, as well as professional fees for the sunset review follow-up the department was scheduled to go through. Those amounts were not utilized in fiscal year 21, and we're not including any similar fees in the budget for fiscal year 22. We have budgeted for a nominal increase of 5% in the office utilities category. For rent of space and equipment, we have budgeted 10% lower than fiscal year 21 due to lower amounts of fees we expect to pay to Texas State Library and Archives Commission for storage of our hard copy records. We have digitized and disposed of those records. For the most part, we have transitioned to electronic records and we will no longer store paper records at the library. Amount for communication expenses are budgeted 12.5% lower than prior year. We have budgeted for lower expenditures for WebEx, which is currently our video conferencing platform. We are planning transition to Office 365, and we will begin utilization of Microsoft Teams for video conferencing. We have not budgeted also any amounts for Telecon, which is the information service used only during legislative sessions. Our information technology costs are significantly higher than last year. Fiscal year 22 budget includes in the budget amounts for one-time cybersecurity project, scheduled replacement of all mortgage examiner laptops, the monthly fees for Office 365, as well as the monthly fees to the Department of Information Resources Data Center for housing and maintaining our network. The department's miscellaneous operating expenditures have been budgeted 3.4%, or just under $5,000 lower than last year. The decrease is due to lower budgeted amounts for postage, fees paid to Texas Safekeeping Trust, and fees paid to Texas.gov for electronic payments from licensees. In conclusion, at the end of fiscal year 22, we're budgeting for a deficit of approximately $471,000 that will be covered by existing cash reserves. And this concludes my prepared remarks. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer.
Questions?
And that concludes our report.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Commissioner Cooper.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Texas Department of Banking's report starts on page 87. Got more detail here on 88. I'd like to make some general comments. I think as stated possibly earlier by Commissioner Pettijohn, the budget process is very important, obviously, to all state agencies, but it's particularly important to us due to our SDSI status that we have the luxury of having and we need to protect. The largest portion of our budget is devoted to the state chartered banks that we regulate. These entities continue to grow and expand, and we continue to have banks converting to our charter. Our non-depository area is also experiencing such growth. So our budget has been adjusted to reflect this growth. For nearly 13 years now, we have been on a campaign to improve the compensation of our examiners and related positions. The goal that I've established is to be at least 95%, or for us to pay at least 95% of what the FDIC peer pays to their peers or their examiners that we relate to. In some categories, since we've been doing this, I call it baby steps, in some categories, we are at that goal. Generally speaking, the more senior our positions are, the more higher our positions are, the larger the disparity gets to be. So this budget allows for some improvement in that area. I believe it also allows us to fill the best examiners possible, supported by the best support staff possible. And I believe that our regulated entities and our citizens deserve no less. Also, due to the importance of cybersecurity of our regulated entities, we are continuing to devote more resources to this area. And we are doing the same to improve our own cybersecurity posture. And now I'd like to ask Sammy Chadley to come forward and provide more detail.
Good morning, Sammy Chadley, Department of Banking. In my remarks, I'm going to go over an overall summary of the budget, then talk about revenues, talk about expenditures, and then our cash position. And please, if you have any questions while I'm doing this, please ask me. So in our budget preparation process, each divisional area was tasked with creating their budget using historical, current, and forecast information, and incorporating the strategic planning initiatives and agency priorities developed for 2022. Cost centers for each industry were reviewed to make sure each industry is covering its related costs. Our proposed 2022 budget shows an increase of 4.91% over 2021. The largest increases in personnel costs with four new examiners, including one IT specialist. The 2022 budget also includes one-time expenses to upgrade our internal IT network and infrastructure. Excluding salary increases, the 22,
2022 budget would have increased by only 1.97% as compared to 2021. The biggest driver of the budget increase is the increase in bank assets under supervision. The budget for 2022 also includes the potential conversion of our charter of a large bank at approximately $40 billion in assets. We believe that with this budget increase, we can continue to fulfill our responsibilities. You will notice that our 2021 estimated expenditures are approximately $4 million below our budgeted expenditures. That is due to unfilled vacancies, including retirements, lower travel and training expenditures due to the pandemic, professional service fees that did not materialize, and planned information technology items that came in cheaper than anticipated. This budget is based on the department conducting 844 examinations, processing 324 applications, notices, and filings, and resolving 225 complaints. Our proposed 2022 budget has revenues projected at $31.3 million, which does not include $8.7 million in bank assessments that are not expected to be assessed to operate the department. These assessment reductions will allow the agency to cover expended expenditures at the same level of $31.3 million with no additional contribution to our cash balance for FY 2022. Next is revenue. Assessments are approximately 90% of our revenues, and they represent about 25.7 million dollars for 2022 as compared to 23.8 million for 2021. Our revenue projections include the following: bank asset growth of 22.2%, which increased assessments by 5.2 million. And also includes anticipated conversion of the large bank that I referred to earlier, as well as growth and merger activity. The revenue projections also include the normal level of problem banks. They include corporate activity increase by almost 47% due to an increase in projected bank and MSB application activities. And revenue projections also include a revenue decrease for our non-depository supervision area due to lower salary projections and associated benefits. Next is our expenditures. Again, as mentioned earlier, professional costs is our major expenditure category and accounts for most of the budget increase. The proposed 2022 budget includes 27 vacancies that are staggered and filled throughout the fiscal year. This budget also includes four additional FTEs. Our FTEs went from requested FTEs from 198 in 2021 to 202 in 2022. The budget proposes an overall compensation increase of 3.8%. If we add benefits to that, that would become 4.05% increase. The total personnel costs are estimated to be $27.2 million, including benefits and other personnel costs. Personnel costs account for 87% of the proposed budget request. There's a projected 28.5% of salaries in this budget that is used for benefits. Adding to that is 1.5% of mandated by legislature increases related to healthcare and retirement contributions. So our overall benefits package is about 30%. Are there any questions so far? Next item is our cash position. This year, we did not utilize $6.89 million in available bank and trust assessments and $895,000 in non-depository supervision assessments, as we continuously manage our cash balance growth for compliance with liquidity policy guidelines. Our anticipated unreserved cash balance at fiscal year end 2021 is estimated to be approximately $7.8 million for roughly 3 months of the 2022 budget. That will keep our unreserved cash within 2 to 6 months for liquidity policy guidelines. In conclusion, with this budget, the agency can carry out its mission, meet performance standards, and maintain a competitive salary structure and meet our standards of service. I'd like to thank Commissioner Cooper for his guidance, and Wendy Rodriguez and Krishna Jones for all their help on this budget preparation. Thank you. Any questions?
Madam Chairman, I have a couple questions. Operating cost, Mr. Chadley, just real quick, sure. Big increases on professional fees,
yes.
even though they went down or significantly under budget this year, going up next, significant increase next year, and then under just what's included under the miscellaneous operating costs that have a large increase for 22.
Yes, so under professional services, we have a .NET programmer that we didn't have last year that's included, and we have a document exchange software of $150,000 that we did not include. It's called Index, and it's a rewrite of a program that we need to do for 2022. That's under professional services. We have our IT contractor for that one. Under miscellaneous costs, there are several items. We're having, there's about $55,000 in laptops and blade servers and printers and scanners that we need to, that we're purchasing for 2020, plan to purchase for 2022. There's $29,000 for CSBS certifications, about $28,000 of new software and licenses and tools for our programmers. There's an $18,000 increase in workers' comp claim. Those are increasing every year. And we have a $14,000 for a LinkedIn subscription. It's a recruiting tool that we are including for 2022.
Okay. That's all under miscellaneous.
Yes, sir.
Sounds like those are just a product of growing.
Yes.
It's getting bigger.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And back to the professional fees. I missed that. I'm sorry.
Sure, sure.
Most of what you described then is falling into next year? Next year's budget? Okay.
Yes.
Okay, and then the 129 will stay under budget this year, and then...
But, and then next year.
And then next year.
Yes. It's a 21 budget versus 22 budget. Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
You're welcome.
So,
this is Secretary. I was unable to hear the number of FTE growth. It went from 190 plus.
198 to 202.
To how many?
198 to 202. 202.
Okay, thank you.
It increased by 4.
Very well.
Madam Chair, also, beginning on page 89, we have letters of support from the Independent Bankers Association of Texas, and then on page 91, letter of support from the Texas Bankers Association. Larry, back to your question, we are trying to increase our, I call it our cyber security hygiene, so we have some money going in there. That's going to be a continued growth, I believe. We've added personnel, and we've added some contractors, and we're improving the system, we think, quite a bit. So, and then as Sammy mentioned, We do expect the very large bank to convert at the end of this month. We've got a $45 billion bank, so some of this growth goes to absorb that.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, unless there's other questions, that's all we have.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Sammy.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2022 operating budgets?
Madam Chairman, this is Larry Long. I'll make a motion.
Is there a second?
This is Hector Shedlow, second.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 All the ayes have it, and the motion passes. We will now move on to item G, starting with Commissioner Pettijohn.
Item G relates to the annual internal audit report presented by Garza Gonzalez, and I think they're on to present their report. On the line, I think. Are they on the webinar?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. Says the voice from the ceiling.
Good morning, Audit Committee members and commissioners. I thank you for inviting me today to join today's meeting. My name is Cheryl Saucedo, a senior auditor representing Garza Gonzalez and Associates, OCCC's internal auditors. I am here today to present to you OCCC's internal audit annual report for fiscal year 2021, dated May 20th, 2021. 2021, which you will find in your board packet beginning on page 93. Chica Cherry, who is also a senior auditor, worked on this engagement. However, due to prior commitments, neither she nor the audit partner were able to be here this morning. But I'm happy here to be here in their absence to present the annual report to you. The state auditor's office prescribes the form and content of the annual report as included in your board packet required for compliance with the Texas Internal Auditing Act. The Texas Internal Auditing Act requires that the annual report be submitted to the governor, the legislative budget board, and the state auditor before November 1st. Therefore, upon your approval, it will be submitted to those agencies. The internal audit plan approved by the audit committee and the finance commission on December 11, 2020, included two audit areas to be performed for fiscal year 2021. This report contains the results of the audit of the fiscal division area for the 7 months ended March 31st, 2021, and also reflects the results of the follow-up procedures performed in the current year of the findings and recommendations that were presented in the prior year internal audit reports. The report of the TFEE Fund Investment Portfolio Administrative Audit dated March 19, 2021, was presented to and approved by the Audit Committee and Finance Commission at the April 16, 2021 meeting. Thus, all the internal audit functions included in the approved audit plan have been completed. Page one of the annual report is our letter addressed to the Finance Commission and the Audit Committee members, which indicates what I've previously mentioned. We are pleased to report that our audit disclosed no material findings. However, we did identify certain matters that are opportunities for strengthening internal controls and ensuring compliance with state requirements of OCCC's established policies and procedures. Page 12 of this report provides a summary and related ratings of these comments. We have reported one finding with a low rating and one observation, which can be found on pages 13 through 14 of this report. In both instances, management is in agreement with these comments and recommendations, and a management response is provided to indicate how they plan to address the recommendations. On page 15 of the report, you will find the results of our follow-up procedures performed on the two findings and one observations that was presented in the prior year internal audit reports. We are pleased to report that two recommendations were fully implemented, and one is ongoing due to the coronavirus pandemic causing a delay in the document imaging and verification process. Lastly, on page 16 of the report, you'll find the proposed audit area for fiscal year 2022, which is the human resource and payroll area. The proposed audit area was identified using the risk assessment performed in fiscal year 2021. When fiscal year 2022 risk assessment is performed, the area recommended for audit could differ from what is being reported. Upon completion of fiscal year 2022 risk assessment, the internal audit plan for fiscal year 2022 will be developed and presented to the Audit Committee and the Finance Commission for acceptance and approval at a meeting to be determined at a later date. I would like to take the opportunity to thank OCCC staff for all their help in facilitating this audit process and providing the information timely, which allowed us to perform the audit efficiently, although it was conducted remotely. I would like to also mention that we were not limited in any form or fashion. All information was requested and provided, and we had access to communicate with all personnel we felt necessary. Thank you. That concludes my presentation. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions? I'll say thank you, Cheryl. We appreciate your report.
Yes, thank you. Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner's 2021 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates? Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Larry Long.
Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 The ayes have it, and the motion passes. We will now move on to item H. Commissioner Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. SML's annual and total audit report begins on page 115 of the Finance Commission materials, and I believe that the auditors are on the line to give a detailed report.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, today I will also be presenting to you SML's internal audit annual report for fiscal year 2021, dated July 12, 2021. Found on page 115 of the report packet. I was a senior auditor with Carson Gonzalez and Associates, SML's internal auditors who worked on this engagement. The state auditor's office prescribes the form and content of the annual report as included in your board packet, required for the compliance with the Texas Internal Auditing Act. Upon your approval, the annual report will be submitted to the governor, the legislative board, and the state auditor as required by the Texas Internal Auditing Act. The internal audit plan for SML approved by the Audit Committee and the Finance Commission on December 11, 2020, included one audit area to be performed in fiscal year 2021. The report contains the results of the audit of the procurement, contract management, and hub compliance area for 7 months ended March 31st, 2021. And also reflects the follow-up procedures performed in the current year of the findings and recommendations that were presented in prior year's internal audit reports. On page one of the annual report is our letter addressed to the Finance Commission and the Audit Committee members, which indicates what I previously mentioned. We are pleased to report that our audit disclosed no material findings. On page 15 of the report, you will find the results of our follow-up procedures performed on the two observations that were presented in the prior year internal audit reports. We are pleased to report that the two recommendations were fully implemented. Lastly, on page 16 of the report, you will find the proposed audit area for fiscal year 2022, which is the human resources and payroll area. The proposed audit area was identified using a risk assessment performed in fiscal year 2021. When the fiscal year 2022 risk assessment is performed, the area recommended for audit could differ from what is being reported. Upon completion of fiscal year 2022 risk assessment, the interim audit plan for fiscal year 2022 will be developed and presented to the Audit Committee and Finance Commission for acceptance and approval at a meeting to be determined at a later date. I would also like to thank Antonia and the SML staff for help facilitating this audit process and providing the information timely, which allowed us to perform the audit efficiently. Although the audit was conducted remotely as well, we were not limited in any form or fashion. All information we requested was provided, and we had access to communicate with all personnel we felt necessary. Thank you again for having me. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Madam Chairman, just a quick question on the risk assessments. Is that Caroline? I don't know if this is for you or Garza there. But those risk assessments, are those just department interviews with people and questionnaires, and then Garza comes back with what they say should be audited for the next fiscal year? Is that the way that happens?
Carson,
it happens every year.
It happens every year with all three, similar process. And if I leave something out, Leslie, jump in. But they do a questionnaire. They may meet with the commissioner and other staff members to see. They'll ask the commissioner if we have any particular area we want to have looked at.
Okay.
And have we seen potential fraud anywhere that we want to have looked at? And then they do the risk assessment and identify the areas that they suggest.
And that's the result, that's what we're seeing here. They come back to you?
They come back to you all.
Okay.
We will see it before it comes, but they will come to you all and say, this is what we recommend. And this may or may not be what is on after the formal risk assessment, but at this point, this is what they would recommend. And I'm speaking for you, Cheryl, so please jump in and if I have left something out or said something incorrectly about your process.
Oh, yes, what you said is correct. We perform the risk assessment every year, And we utilize eight risk factors in order for us to develop our overall risk assessment and select an area, which is provided to the commissioners and management and then presented to the audit committee and finance commission.
That's good. I saw it was the same for every committee. I just thought I'd pick on the savings and loans.
That's okay.
Okay, I yield back.
Thank you.
And Madam Chairman, I would like to say something to Cheryl, and thank you, Cheryl, to you and your team for your professionalism and courtesy during the audit. We appreciate it.
Great, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Do I hear a motion to recommend that the Finance Commission approve the Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending's 2021 Annual Internal Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates?
Larry Long, I'll make a motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Superintendent Sedlin, second.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 The ayes have it, and the motion passes. Thank you. We will now move on to item I, Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 136 is a very brief report on the Texas Financial Education Endowment. I'm just going to mention one highlight, that the next cycle for grant is receiving applications. The window is open to receive those applications. The deadline is September 1st, 2021. We've been active in outreach trying to solicit applications. We're getting a lot of questions. We don't have many submitted yet, but based upon some of the number of questions, we're hoping people are working on applications and we'll get, you know, sufficient applications submitted for us to evaluate by that deadline. It's our plan to evaluate those, for have the Grant Advisory Committee evaluate those in time for the Finance Commission and the Audit Committee to consider awards at the October meeting. If we don't have a sufficient response to the applications window, then we'll have to rethink the time frame. But our current plan is we hope to get sufficient response, and at our next meeting, October, we'll actually be recommending the next cycle of grant awards. And that concludes my report on the Texas Financial Education Endowment activities.
Okay, thank you. Well, I want to thank everyone for all of the reports. I know this was a long meeting and a lot of information, so I appreciate everybody's patience. If there is there being no further business, the meeting of the Audit Committee of the Finance Commission of Texas is now adjourned. The time is 9:52 a.m.